We've been withholding funds, distributions to our own partnerships, have a small war chest in case something does happen. Because yeah, if interest rates continue to climb and we come up to a situation where we need to refinance and we need to come to the table with some capital, we're going to be able to do it. We want to be prepared for all that.
This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 16 years, has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of his incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and I am honored. We have a couple of icons in the industry. We have Carl and Jason from Performance Self-Storage Group, and Carl is one of those gentlemen that when I got into the business back in 2005, he had already been in the business for a number of years, one of, if not the top brokers in the nation. And also, like myself, educating people, lifting the tide for all these self-storage investors out there, not only to make it easier for us to all transact and to do it above board and with integrity, but also to create a little less friction. And so thankful to have both Carl and Jason here. So with that, Carl, Jason, tell Storage Nation a little bit about yourselves and your journey in self-storage.
Okay, I'll start. You know, Scott, and thanks again for having us. You know, our main business was a Ford dealership in Albany, New York. It was in our family for 105 years. And as a result of the Ford dealership, we got in the self-storage business and just did a speaking gig in Portugal. And I said, okay, who has been in this business 10 years, 20 years? Well, Scott, my family, we built our first facility in Albany, New York in 1970, subsequently built. We've been in the business a really long time. And then I kind of moved in this business. I left Albany, went to Arizona State University. After that, I started working at Marcus Millichap for 4 years. And I got a phone call from an uncle and said, hey, Carl, there's all these great apartment deals and self-storage deals for sale in Dallas, Texas. Would you be interested in moving there? So in 1990, I moved to Dallas. And this is going to be, Scott, kind of a similar situation, which I think we're going to be maybe rolling into, is that in 2 years, I bought 300 apartment units in Dallas, and I bought 5 self-storage deals. I bought, 3 in Dallas, 1 in Fort Worth, 1 in Phoenix, and 1 in Fort Myers, Florida. And that's really how I started. And in all these deals were either FDIC owned or RTC owned. And some of you younger people out there, if you don't know what that is, the RTC is the Resolution Trust Corporation, which was formed by the federal government when they took over failed assets of banks for literally on the dollar. And give you, for example, Scott, the first storage facility I bought, Bill Hoban of StoreQuest owns it, by the way, today. It was 392 self-storage units, 48,000 square feet, $385,000 for that. And an interesting point is back then, the cap rates were 10, the interest rates were 8. And when it came time to do the loan in terms of qualification, I had to bring my driver's license to the closing table. That's it. That's basically how I got my feet wet in storage and how I ended up here and connecting with Jason Allen, who's my business partner in the storage deals we own and also Performance Self Storage Group. I moved here. My wife wanted to start a family, so we moved to the Redwood City, which is where her family's from. And then shortly thereafter, I connected with Jay and we started selling self-storage deals. And that started in 1997. So as we sit here today, Carl and Jay, we own 4 self-storage deals and we are part owners of 42 self-storage deals, literally scattered throughout the country. And then our company, Performance Self Storage Group, which we actually formally formed in 2010. And we've done, Scott, just about a little bit, I think last quarter, over $1 billion of self-storage transactions.
Well, a similar trajectory, although over a longer time span and with a few more experiences thrown in there. But Carl, once again, so glad to have you here. Jason, you and I haven't had a chance to spend much time with each other. And I think I'm not going out on a limb here when Carl says that you are the brains behind the business, or at least the workhorse, one of the two. So I'll let you jump in and give everyone a little bit of background on yourself.
No, hey, Scott, first of all, thanks for having us on the podcast here. Definitely a big fan of your show and everything that you do in the industry. So appreciate you having us. But yeah, I got my start in the business literally as Carl's assistant, probably maybe 95, 96. And I did everything from databasing self-storage properties, which back in the day was not going online. We would actually go to the library and find all the phone books, make sure nobody was looking around. at us and ripped the pages out that said self-storage. That's how we database. And that was really the only way. You know, nowadays it's easy for people to database. You just pay for a service like Yardi, pay $20,000, $30,000, and you will know the name of every storage facility throughout the country. So I really started from the ground up trying to figure out this industry with Carl. And as Carl mentioned, since 97, on the brokerage side, we've done about $1 billion+ worth of transactions. And then on the ownership side, we've managed our own properties. We've rehabbed our own properties. We've seen everything and anything there is within this industry. And thankfully, we are in this industry. It's a great product type. I don't think I'd own anything else on the real estate side. And it's definitely been good to us for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's my story.
Yeah, fantastic. And for me, I enjoy these conversations because it takes me back to, I don't want to say my childhood, but my childhood in self-storage. And I was looking up those same databases at the library. I wasn't ripping the pages out, and no judgment here, but there's something about the resourcefulness that those of us that were investing back in those days, we appreciate. I love technology and I love the ability that we have data at our fingertips right now, but I certainly won't sidestep the thrill of going in there and beating our competition, like you said, without anybody looking over your shoulder. And just, we knew that those of us that did the heavy lifting and the hard work were the ones that are going to be rewarded by that. And to your point, Carl, you know, history repeats itself, right? We have a whole lot of folks that are out there belly aching right now because interest rates are 8 and they can't find a 10 cap deal. Well, deals are made. We make deals at a 10 cap when interest rates are 8, and those are the ones you should do. The low hanging fruit is gone. And so, yeah, the folks that have had this wind at their sail since 2009 and 10, with a big sail and a big amount of wind in that bull market, this is where we started at 8 and 10, 8% interest rates and 10% cap rates. And now we just need to work a little harder. But those of us that know how to do it and are digging in and doing the heavy lifting are the ones that are going to be rewarded. So for everyone out there, Storage Nation, this is the time. This is an opportunity that we have in front of us right now. If we could, Jason, Carl, whoever wants to start. I walked in a room the other day, and maybe you guys have been called this as well, but somebody said, hey, there's Scott Myers, the OG of self-storage. And first I was a little bit offended because I still think I look like I'm 23 years old again, and I know I'm not, but kind of embracing that now. And you know what? With the gray hair and the loss of the hair and the scar tissue from a couple of recessions under our belt, I'm leaning into this now. And those of us that have been through recessions, and Carl, you've been through 4, as you mentioned, Jason, I think you're 3+ as well. I'm heading into my 3rd. And with that comes the ability to look a little further down the road. Every recession's different. We know that, but we can see a little further down the road. And so I want to get both of your takes and perhaps your strategies and what you're doing as we head into this next phase, this next economic cycle.
Okay. And I'll start. And Scott, remember, I'll date myself a little bit. I remember going to the first self-storage convention. We saw each other at Inside Self-Storage a week ago. And I remember I went to my first self-storage convention, the SSA, at Caesar's Palace, 1977. I was 17 years old. And the entire self-storage association was 30 people. In Caesar's Palace with metal chairs, and the speaker was Buzz Victor for 3 days. Now I'm really dating myself. But then I remember, Scott, that's when in our Ford dealership, prime rate was 18%. That's where we almost lost everything. Moving fast forward, when I moved to Dallas in 1990, again, the cap rate was 10, the interest rate was 8. That was the time where I made, I would say, most of the money that I have now, because I bought 300 apartment units and 5 storage facilities in 2 years. That's a lot for one guy and his wife working out of their house. Now, I'll be honest with people and say, in 2008, in 2010, Scott, I had a $10 million loan that got called that I was personally liable for, and it's called joint and several. Some of you people don't know what that means. That means there are 7 partners. Each partner was joint and individually responsible. That means if something goes wrong, all of you are on the hook individually. And then the second one was an $8 million loan that got called in San Diego. You know, not happy to say, but humbly to say that I almost went bankrupt twice, 2008 to 2010 period. And moving forward, Jay and I, like I said, we own 4 self-storage deals now. And I would say now we've learned about with the debt service coverage ratio, our loan to value on, let's say on our deals, we're probably maybe 40% loan to value. And we were also forward thinking, is this really where Jay was really pushing me? It's like, Carl, listen, we got to put 10-year fixed rate non-recourse loan. So on our deal in Manteca, we have 3.6 10-year fixed rate non-recourse, that which we've got 8.5 years of runway left on that. In Henderson, which is Las Vegas, we have 3.6 10-year fixed rate non-recourse. The one in Moore Park, we have 4% interest only, but that one we've got 3.5 years to go. So, but we're cautious now of saving our cash and trying to run our properties. The opportunities are going to be for those of you out there. I'll give you an example. I met a father and son team that bought a self-storage facility in Houston just over a year ago. It was a $6 million deal, and they did one of the SBA loans. So that means they did 10% down, which is $600,000. They got a $5.4 million loan, which was partially guaranteed by the government via the SBA. That interest rate, Scott, has gone from 3.5% to 7.5%. That's going to be an opportunity for somewhere, because that probably, let's be honest, Scott, Jay and I know this, it's probably is worth less than the loan amount today.
And not only that, but I think what we're seeing, and maybe, and unfortunately for them, they probably didn't see this coming as well. You just can't build value that quick. Everybody needs to have a sense of urgency to build value in their facility every day, regardless of whether we're heading into a downturn or not. But that is just plain getting caught out by the market. You can't make up that much, create that much value and generate that much revenue and drive your expenses down that much to cover for that. That's what we're seeing all across the country right now.
Right. And then the second opportunity, which I see is going to be out there, Scott, is the guy who bought land, paid a little bit too much for it. Remember, this is 3 years ago. And then he built it, probably went over budget. And now his rate, which is a lot of the construction loans, the guy's got, number one, they're a full personal guarantee. His rate has gone from 3.5. When I met him last, it was 7.25. I bet it's 8.5 today. And what's going to happen to those guys, where it's going to be an opportunity, is that he's going to fill up, get to his 80, 90% occupancy. And all of a sudden, the lender is going to call him up and go, hey, you're not taking in enough money to hit a 1.25 debt service coverage ratio. And that's when the world's going to change.
Yeah. I mean, those that maybe weren't as savvy heading into it, let alone the folks that were doing it right, are just getting caught, both in terms of the timing of the market factors change, you know, sometimes to the fault of maybe some folks maybe being naive, and then other times just as a matter of the change in the economy and the rapid run up in interest rates. And that is what is different in this recession versus others, is how quickly the interest rates jumped. And then add on to that supply chain issues, and we know time is money, and the increase in construction costs for the development projects have all, that's been a triple whammy for those as well. So absolutely, all of this does spell opportunity for us. And again, nobody likes to see a pandemic or a recession, but we know for those of us that are in a position to be able to come alongside, help assist, do joint ventures, there are going to be opportunities out there. So Jason, give us your take. What are you seeing as you look down the horizon?
Sure. Well, you know, to look down the horizon, I think you always got to look towards the past a bit, because the past kind of tells the story of where we're going to head. A year ago, I mean, on the brokerage side, we were quoting deals at a 4, 4.5, maybe a 5% cap rate when you could go out and get 3.5% debt. And boy, has the world changed, and it's changed insanely, insanely quick. So today we're getting debt quotes 5.5, 6 to 6.5, pushing 7%. That's a massive change just over a year. And so as Carl mentioned, on the horizon, what we're going to see is a lot of groups who had, let's say, bought based on speculation a few years ago, they put short-term debt. Street rates have now leveled off, if not have started to go down in some markets. Cap rates are not compressing. They're going the other way. They're heading up. It's the perfect storm. And now you've got debt coming due. Now, what you will see, as Carl had mentioned, is debt coverage ratios are going to be flipped upside down, which, if you're in a big partnership, means capital calls. Well, who's going to want to pony up cash to own the same deal that they've owned that has been cash flowing? And they're going to say, well, what's going on here? And we are in an uncontrollable situation solely driven by the increase of interest rates and also a change and shift in market. So on the horizon, I foresee not now, but probably 6 to 12 months, a lot of storage properties hitting the streets, hitting the market, people trying to exit, potential partnerships, disputes. There's going to be some pain, and pain spells opportunity. For some investors now, they say, Carl J., what should we do? We say, stay in cash right now, unless you find a sweetheart deal. But it's going to take some time, but there will be some awesome opportunity, especially for the cash buyers that know what they're doing in this industry, that can buy right, that have conservative underwriting, and they know what they're doing. So I think there's going to be some great opportunity down the road here.
Yeah, I do as well. Again, we've been preparing for this since 2009. I watched my cohorts, including you two, as well as the REITs, mop up 2008, latter part of 2008, 9 and 10, when we're seeing, as you said, Jason, we look back in history, that's the time you wanted to be in cash and have it. And we had some, and we went on a buying spree as well, but not enough. And so we learned from that. And so we've spent the past 10 years beefing up our private equity partners and our list of folks that we can reach out to, our own cash, as well as cementing and creating new lender relationships, because we knew we'd be heading into another time in which there would be opportunities. And what's shaping up right now, the groundswell, is what looks to be the biggest land grab that I've seen, at least in my career and in my lifetime. And so we're really poised and ready to make smart decisions and purchasing decisions. And Jason, Jason, I want to touch on a couple of things you said, but I want to go back to you, Carl. You'd mentioned through the last couple of recessions, you know, you had a $10 million note and an $8 million note come due, and you almost went bankrupt. And that struck me and probably several other folks as well, because the last recession, the carnage was massive and the landscape is littered with investors that are no longer in the business. They either never came back or maybe some of them hit the reset button and licked their wounds, but they had to start over again. That's not only a testament to you and Jason, but Carl, it's also a testament to our industry as well. It is recession resistant and we do benefit in terms of people when they're downsized and they're falling on hard times. We're in the trauma and transition business, as we've heard over and over again. And we do fairly well during a recession. And this is an asset class that does perform well. And so hats off to you for being smart and doing the things that you just mentioned, Jason and Carl as well. But I guess that's a testament to folks out there. If you do this business right and you treat it like a business instead of a hobby, it'll treat you well during the down times as well. But you have to be smart about it. You just have to be smart. Your LTV at 40%, that didn't go unnoticed either. We stay within, we've got a $25 million fund that we just wrapped up and we're at about 60% LTV across the board. And we stepped into these properties with some value in it. But 40%, that is an extreme amount of discipline that I want to just point out and commend you on. That is strong and puts you in a position where if any bank comes knocking, you guys should be in good shape no matter what. So that's a good lesson for everyone out here as well. And what I want to touch on next is I'm glad I got a couple of brokers in the room that have had a little bit of experience under their belt. One of the questions that we have and one of the question marks, I guess, hanging over the state that we're in right now. And as we head into this next phase is there's always a lag time. And I think it's a little bit longer in self-storage because it is the Cinderella of commercial real estate. It is no longer the ugly stepchild. It performs well during a recession. And so when we start to head into a high interest rate environment and into a recession, apartments, assisted living, the hospitality industry, retail, certainly the others, they get hit pretty quickly. When interest rates go up, cap rates go up in those asset classes really, really quickly in terms of a sale just to meet the seller's expectations, and they're skittish. But in storage, we stay pretty dang close to the interest rates. There seems to be a greater lag time. So I want to dispel that myth that I just put out there. If it is a myth, are you seeing that in practice? And if so, how long are you seeing before interest rates are at 8 and we start to see existing, say, at all things being equal, Class B facilities that are maybe 75% occupied or greater at street rates before they start heading up and we get to that place where there's a 2% differential or a buffer? Sorry, that was a mouthful, but are you tracking and does that make sense?
Yeah, I got it. I'll start with, and again, last year, Scott, we did, as a broker now, $140 million of transactions. In the first quarter of last year, Jay and I did $80 million of transactions. And we sold a deal in Windsor, Sonoma, Santa Rosa, and Lodi. And the cap rate, Scott, of those four deals was anywhere between 3.2 and 4%. So then, you know, the year went on. We sold some more deals. Fourth quarter comes along. We list a deal in Tracy with a low cap rate, sub 4%. We list the deal for $24 million, Scott. After being in the market 2-3 months, the best offer was 18. And then we listed one in Modesto for 10. The best offer was 7. And Jay and I, we are never, ever going to bridge those gaps. And I would say now moving forward is that the last four listing proposals we've done, I'll go down the line. 12 million, seller's expectations, we're at 9. 25 million, we're at 18. We did one last week in the Sacramento market. The seller's thinking 9 million, we're 6 million. I did one literally right after I saw you inside Self Storage. The guy was thinking 18 million, we're at 10. So with that being said, Scott, Jay and I mean, we have zero interest in wasting our time, the seller's time, the buyer's time on an overpriced listing. Whereas now, today, we have a deal that we're putting under contract today. It's in North Hollywood. It's a market-priced 6.7 cap on current income with a 30% vacancy factor. It's a 9.1 cap on the pro forma. Now, to me, that is a market-priced with a motivated seller. And as a result or proof of that, we got 9 offers at or above the asking price.
If I could, Jay, before you comment on that, Carl, when you were mentioning the 2 or 3 examples, the one portfolio or properties that was 25 million and your pricing was 18. Again, for reference, we're sitting here in May of 2023. What was the seller's cap rate on a trailing 12? What was your cap rate? And I know that's not everything, but just giving us a reference point.
Jay, why don't you answer that one?
On that property in particular, the cap rate market, going to market cap rate was around a 4 because the sold comps could justify it. Unfortunately, that was the point of time when the 10-year treasury really started to skyrocket and the market reacted. And so buyers were coming in at a 5% plus cap rate. Because at the end of the day, we're in this business to make money and the numbers have to work. And that's like Carl has mentioned. Our pricing compared to seller expectations has been completely off because sellers look in the rearview mirror. We and the buyers look forward. And in a market like we are in now, where pricing is going down because of the rise in interest rates, it takes the sellers, I'd say, 6 months to a year to get educated and to really realize, hey, my property's not worth $10 million anymore. It's worth $7 million because of X, Y, and Z. It takes a long, long time for them to be just to realize that there has been a shift. And as Carl mentioned, for us on the brokerage side, we have no interest in going to market with an overpriced listing that's going to waste everybody's
time. Sure. That doesn't do any good for your reputation either. And it's interesting, Jason. You know, you said it takes the sellers a long time to learn it. I just don't think they want to get it through their head. I mean, they can see it. I mean, the approach that I take as a buyer is essentially the same that you're taking as a broker as well. And if you sit across the table from them and you go through the underwriting and you say, here's how it pencils out, and here's a differential that we need to have, and here's a debt service coverage ratio, and Mr. and Mrs. Seller, I'm not trying to steal your property. I'm just being realistic. In order for this to trade in the market, the lender needs to see this. The appraiser's going to need to see this in order for it to transact. And it just doesn't cash flow enough to be able to go across the finish line. And so I'll take my buyer's hat off and put my consultant hat on and say, well, the way I see it, I'm not your buyer, but you've got a couple options. You neither need to meet the market, because whether you think I'm blowing you smoke or trying to steal your property, the next three or four buyers or brokers that come through here and have this conversation with you are probably going to arrive at the same place and the same price that I'm offering you. So either you need to come to the meet the market where it is politely, tactfully, sir or ma'am, or you need to wait for one of two things: until you create enough value, or that interest rates come down and cap rates come in line with your expectation. That's about the only, unless you've got another bag of tricks, because these are the conversations that we're having with folks right now. And then also, perhaps if they're open to seller financing, then we can structure some terms that look a little different if they can get their price, but we get better terms. In other words, let's take the interest rate off the table. If you're willing to carry the note and be the bank, then maybe we can have a conversation. I can get to your number and we can have a stair step or something along those lines in terms of working with the rate if you're willing to be the bank. But any other tricks up your sleeve? How are you educating and shortening, bridging that gap and not having to wait to manage that seller's expectation so you can transact the deal instead of waiting a year before they come to the realization that this is the price they need to be at?
Well, yeah, fortunately right now, there's just a lull in the market. There's a lull. And inventory, especially California, that's our bread and butter market. This is the market we really truly specialize in. There's not a lot for sale. And that's why this property we recently took to market in Southern California, we had 1 million phone calls. Everybody wanted the package. We had multiple offers. And this is in a rising interest rate environment that's incredibly cloudy. We don't know where we're headed. We don't know where cap rates are going to go. Are interest rates going up? Are they going down? Where are street rates headed? We don't know. But that property was priced correctly. And that's why we got the action we did. Now, if this was a year or two ago, you could price a property pretty much at any price you wanted. And you were going to get multiple offers. Yeah, and we would push the price higher because of we were in that type of market. This is a total different world we're in now. And again, that's why for us on the brokerage side, we're very selective in who we're going to work with, because we don't want to waste people's time. It's got to be a deliverable deal. And qualifying buyers on the buy side, we're now kind of qualifying sellers. Like, really, why are you selling? Are you just selling to sell? If that's the case, I don't know if we're going to want to work with you, because you're not going to be realistic in pricing versus a partnership dispute, or someone's husband or wife may have passed away, or you know what? I want to pay off debt. There's got to be some motivation there for the seller to sell today. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a story there. Again, you'd look at a couple of years ago, a guy wanted to sell. He sold, he got whatever price he wanted. It did not. Right. It's totally different today.
If you're already investing in self-storage and you're looking to grow and scale your business, then you need to join the Self-Storage Mastermind. We formed the industry's first mastermind back in 2010, and we stacked it with the 1%ers across the country who specialize in acquisitions, development, and syndication. This exclusive group of storage rock stars meets once a quarter in private settings to combine business and VIP experiences that you won't find at any of the trade shows in Las Vegas or at the other copycat masterminds. So if you're looking to become part of an advanced community that openly shares best business practices, along with the largest pipeline of off-market deals and access to the top private equity resources, then you need to be in the room. So if you think you're a fit, then go to thestoragemastermind.com to apply. That's thestoragemastermind.com, and we'll see you on the inside. Yeah, right now, if they say, well, I just want to test the waters, I see my neighbor down here got $300 a square foot. And so if he can do that, I figure my price is worth this. Well, what's the reason you want to sell? Well, I'm just testing the waters. Everything's for sale, including my wife, if the price is right. Those are the ones we walk away from versus what you just mentioned. Hey, somebody in the family's got an illness and they're not going to be around and we want to exit, or my partner and I aren't getting along, or it's time to trade in, trade up, we depreciated it. Yeah, if there's no compelling reason, then we already know right away it's probably going to be a short conversation. So go ahead, Carl.
The other example I'll give you. So Jay and I sold a deal in the San Diego market that closed in January, and a brother-sister owned it because sadly their father got in a bad car accident, passed away. The brother owned 65%, the daughter owned 35%. And for us, which was great, they had an appraisal that came in at like the 10.5 range. And they said, well, we'd like to kind of push it a little bit. So in their mind, their expectation, they had that 10.5 plus in their market. So there's still always going to be those transactions, Scott, where I hate to say this, somebody passes away and the heirs have a stepped up baseless. And then if they don't want to be in the self storage business, they're going to be most likely a market rate seller.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, I have to ask the question because I am always in data gathering mode. I think that's how we win at this game. And again, my crystal ball is in the shop, but I've got my ear to the ground. There's about 2 to 3 economists that I follow pretty closely that also have been through multiple recessions. They've got a handle on what's going on in the economy, and they're talking a whole bunch of smarter folks that are more connected to what's going on in the world today with regards to finance in this country than I will ever have. And all of them seem to state different things, and at the end of the day, are shrugging their shoulders. Most likely, most recessions have lasted about 9 months, with the exception of the Great Recession that was about twice that. If we follow suit, if we look at market cycles, they're always 18 years, meaning front to back. And so as we head into 2024 is when we should be at the end of this economic cycle, meaning at that point on the backside, sliding down of the bell curve in terms of interest rates and cap rates coming back down in 2024, if you agree with and buy into that philosophy. And then there's other folks that say, you know what, there's going to be a war in Asia. The war in Russia is going to be escalated. And there are a whole lot of other issues with regards to an energy crisis and other factors that we think that we're going to be in a dark period for 3 or 4 years before we're going to recover and get out of this. And whether interest rates factor into that or not, it remains to be seen. But most of those folks in that camp are saying that interest rates are probably going to be where they are right now, if not higher. So all that to say, the folks that you're listening to, your experience and the powers to be that you have access to, what are you seeing, whether it be a projection or what are you preparing for in terms of maybe the lending rate environment, in terms of interest rates and cap rates and the length of time that we're going to be at the place that we are right now?
I mean, I kind of saw this coming. Scott, I'm 63 years old and gone through 4 recessions. And when I looked at a couple of years ago during COVID, when it was at its worst, the government printed like $9 trillion worth of paper and said, well, I'm going to get $3 billion from the super wealthy. I'm going to get $3 billion from the biggest corporations, and I'm going to get $3 billion from the rest. Well, that didn't happen. In my mind, I think that was the cause, the biggest function of to slow down the economy. Interest rates gone up. I personally don't think interest rates are going to go down until minimum, Scott, after the election. So that all of a sudden, now that puts us in April of 2025. I see other contributing factors, just like you just said. I mean, I think the new norm for us and the world is going to be this higher rate of interest rates. And another product type that I'll talk about, let's say I'm in San Francisco, and in San Francisco, Scott, I had one niece that worked at Airbnb. They occupied 5 buildings in San Francisco 2 years ago. They're in 20 floors of one building. My other niece is at Fenwick and West, and the biggest M&A attorney, not only California, United States. So square feet of vacant space. It's not coming back. I don't see it's coming back. But storage is going to do well. We do good in the good times. We do better in the bad times. And I mean, I think the new norm is going to be, I think interest rates may go down a little bit, but I think the new norm is going to be if the 10-year T-bill is 3.5 and debt is 6%, the cap rate is going to have to be an 8. And then Jay, I think you ought to like now lead into what we've been doing in terms of our deals that we own in terms of debt service coverage ratio and holding back distribution, because people should be doing that. Scott, they should be thinking about it.
Yeah. So we're trying to take a very proactive approach to the assets that we own, really prepare, not for the worst, but just to prepare in case something does happen. And relating to that, when COVID hit and the shelter in place order went into place, all us storage people were freaking out, right? We're saying, oh my God, nobody's going to need storage. Everybody's going to get rid of their stuff. They don't have a job. First thing to go is a storage unit. And what I actually did that week after shelter in place is I put together a break-even analysis for every single storage property we own to figure out specifically what is the percent our property would go down where we're going to be upside down and in trouble. Thankfully, none of that happened, and it went the other way, which was very surprising. So boy, were we wrong thinking that self-storage would not do well during COVID. It actually did the opposite. So now moving forward, what we are doing is we've been withholding funds, distributions to our own partnerships. Again, just have a small war chest in case something does happen. Because yeah, if interest rates continue to climb and we come up to a situation where we need to refinance and we need to come to the table with some capital, we're going to be able to do it. We want to be prepared for all that. And just having cash on the sidelines just for the rehab of our own assets, we want to have that available because the days of pushing rental rates 20% year over year without doing anything to your property and without showing your tenant base that you're doing something to justify that rent increase, I think those days are kind of over. So we're really focusing on beautifying our properties, trying to automate our properties a little more just to really help with payroll. And we're really researching all the tech that's out there now and starting to really see what we can do. One property in particular, we are no longer accepting cash and we're kind of testing that. And I pulled the report today and our income is the exact same. We've had the same amount of move-ins that we typically do. So far, no tenant complaints. So we're kind of really just, you got to get creative during these different changing times. The good times are, they're still here because we're in self-storage and self-storage is great, but things have changed. We got to move with the wave. We got to change. We got to adapt. And as far as what's going to happen in the future with interest rates, my prediction is we're probably going to level off at one point in time. Hopefully rates will settle down around 5.5-6%. I think that's a good number, which technically means you're going to buy a deal at a 7% cap or better. Know how that's going to happen, especially in California, where everybody wants to own self-storage, and any other part of the nation, everybody wants storage. It's keeping cap rates low, which means investors were down to make the numbers pencil. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking 5.5-6% interest rates, cap rates will probably stay in that 5.5-6% range, mm-hmm. maybe less if there's a story with some upside, but it's very cloudy. It's very difficult to predict where our little, not little because we're a $1 billion industry, but where mm-hmm. our piece of the real estate industry is headed. It's very difficult to know.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things I want to point out, a couple of nuggets there, Jason, and that is I did a two-parter on how to prepare for the recession prior to this one being released. I give the numbers of those right now, but I don't know where they're going to land. So go back to part one and two of the 7 things to do to prepare for a recession. And one of them, or call it two of them, is digging into the financials, not burying yourselves in your head in the sand. And hope is not a strategy, hoping you're going to get out of it. I talked exactly to your point that everybody needs to calculate what the break-even point is. If you don't know what that is, you're flying blind. If you don't know where the scoreboard is or how to tell the score, you're going to lose the game, period. And what we've also done is we stress test our NOI, which I'm sure you do on your portfolio as well, is how much vacancy do I have to have? How much does vacancy increase? And how much do I have to reduce rent to keep people from going to my competition and also staying? And so those two X and Y axis, what is the point at which then the alarms go off? So I know not only my break-even point, but how much am I going to stress with the economy, you know, what's happening in order for that to happen? And then can, hopefully that won't happen. And then I can continue to push rates. You know, we're seeing a flattening of those right now and a reduction in some places. And you're right, Jason, no longer are the days when we live in a world of social media and just transparency of data, period. In our industry, when you see that, I won't name the name, but the steel manufacturer that produces all the cold rolled steel for our industry when they're recording record profits and then passing the increases down to us, it doesn't make any of us happy. And so same thing with our clients. To your point, our rental rate increases, those letters come across with, hopefully you like the improvements that we made last month or the past 2 or 3 months. And as a result of that and an increase in our cost, the minimum that we can raise your rate is X. They have to see some value for that as well, instead of you just trying to squeeze them and use an excuse of the recession for that as well. Carl, going back to your point, nothing has changed in terms of our principles for the business. Tell me what the inputs are, which is our ground rules. If the interest rate's 8, we still plug it into our underwriting model and we have our profits. And whether that is, to your point, Jay, interest rates are 5.5, we need to be buying at 7, 7.5. Nothing has changed. Tell me the input. I'm going to raise the yield. I'm going to raise my cap rates where I have to buy. And if it pencils out and the debt service coverage ratio is there, then we buy it. No different than 2005 and 6 when interest rates were at 8 and we're buying at a 10 cap. No different. Yep. 1979 when interest rate was 18%, people were buying at a 20% cap rate. The basic fundamentals of underwriting has not changed. However, I think people fail to dig into and really understand what levers to pull and how to truly dig into and understand the effects in an underwriting model and how to purchase based upon good, solid financial principles and basic underwriting. What would you guys add to that?
The other thing is that, let's just say now, I mean, a year ago when the 10-year T-bill was 1, I mean, people were getting like just almost no return of their money. Now, I mean, what Jay and I have been doing with our cash is that we've been buying, you know, 3-month treasury bills. We've been buying CDs. And Jay's like, okay, Carl, we go through this. We got to make sure we pick a different bank so we don't go over that $250,000. I've been trying to stay at $200,000. And my point is, if I'm going to make 205% return on my money sitting at home, why would I buy any type of real estate or any type of investment if I'm not going to get a spread of a minimum, which goes back to J number of 2%, which is a 7. And again, that fundamental hasn't changed, but what's going to make everything change? And again, and I had a mortgage broker that called me up the other day and he said, Carl, this is what my agents to ask people. And when is your loan due? Exactly. And if your loan is due in the next year, now you've got to be doing your break-even analysis. My $5 million loan is coming due in September of 2023. What is my debt service coverage rate?
That's the question as to whether you keep your property or not.
Yep. And that's why I think you will see a lot of facilities hitting the market towards the end of this year with all the
understood.
Debt.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%.
And it's going to be everywhere. And it's not California. It's going to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Nope. It doesn't matter.
And then even bigger. And I think still the bigger is going to be the guy, as you know, I mean, this is why personally, Scott, I don't want to develop it again in my life. I don't even want to invest in a development deal. I have 3K1s in my financial statement right now. It's a year to get it entitled. It is mm-hmm. a year to build it. It is 2 years to fill it. It's 1 year to stabilize it. So you're looking at 5 years until you get your first distribution. I'm mm-hmm. not even going down that road. But those are the people, I think, who are going to be at risk the most. Because when their construction loan comes due and they're thinking, oh, I'm not going to get $200 for a 10x10. The market is now $160. Mm-hmm. It changes everything. And then on top of that, the old interest rate was 4. The new interest rate is 6. I'm telling you, you better have some deep pockets to pay down that loan to get to a debt service coverage ratio or a place where we can make a profit.
Mm-hmm. And that's good to hear, Carl. It's good for Storage Nation to hear that because conversely, this is a little different economy where we hear many folks that are stating, well, the only way you're going to get yield right now is to develop. But to your point, you've got debt risk, you got lease up risk, you've got cost of construction materials and time and delay issues. I mean, there's a whole lot of risk in development, right? And it was never for the faint of heart, but right now it is a huge risk. Yet, how do we find meeting the seller's expectations where we're at right now during this lag time or waiting another year until the market catches up with these folks? Are we supposed to just sit on the sidelines and just sit in cash? Do we wait till Q3 and Q4 until there's blood in the streets? Or can we do a combination of both? Will there be some developers who are at CFO and now they can't take on the lease up risk because they ran out of runway, they ran out of cash? Or are those opportunities coming to the marketplace? Do I still put money in play? And assuming that by your and our accounts, which I agree with, by 2025, we might see interest rates come down. Well, 2 years, yeah, I'm going to build up value. And that's probably about the right time. And I'm going to exit this property as well. There seems to be more question marks in terms of getting off the sidelines or getting up to the plate and taking a swing than there are sureties as we head into this next phase.
Yeah. And I think no matter what market we're ever in, there's always buyers, there's always sellers. There's, always, there's always a reason to sell. There's always a reason to buy. So even in the shifting market like we're in now, there's still transactions to be had. There's still motivated sellers. Mm-hmm. There's still buyers out there with, I'll say, some funny money because they're just getting antsy to just park it somewhere. I just need something.
Yeah.
Or they're in a trade, guns to their head. And they're like, you know what? I'll buy a 4-cap rate deal or a 5-cap. Mm-hmm. I'll kick the can down the road and figure it out. So no matter what, there's always movement in the market. It's just now when we're on kind of a downward trajectory, it just makes it a little more difficult. And the veterans, I think, like us and you, Scott, we're just more conservative. We're worried a bit more of where we're headed, which we pull back the reins a little bit, which I think is smart. And then I think, again, there's going to be some great opportunity on the horizon for sure.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, Scott, I would say for everyone out there, if you're in cash, probably stay in cash. And I think it's going to be Q3 because we have one partner that, I mean, I'm in like 19 of their deals, Jay's in about 17. And right now they're just getting those phone calls and emails. Hey, you know that development deal we sent you and you said you weren't interested? Well, listen, we've just lowered the price. And Jay, what do you call it? They call it now? Price?
It's called price improved.
That's price improved.
Price improved.
Yeah, right.
Because that's a little negative. Price improved. So I like that.
Yeah. Yep. We've made an improvement to the capital stack and the ratios.
So, that being said, the first guys, the first chink in the armor, I think, Scott, is going to be is the developer guys. They're going to call you up and go, hey, Scott, you know that deal in the Midwest? Well, it was $8 million and our loan $6 million. Would you buy it for like $6.1 million? You know, I think those are going to be the,
I agree.
Like the first wave. And again, I would agree with Jay. I think it's going to be the fourth quarter this year at the earliest.
Yeah, I agree as well. Gentlemen, let's head into the lightning round. I've got two questions. Answer each of them in 60 seconds or less for each of you. First of all, greatest lesson you've learned in the industry since you've been in it?
I'll start. Greatest lesson, invest in this industry. It's the greatest product type there is. I wish I would have bought more, especially in like 2010, 11, 12. That was the golden era when financing was difficult. And those who had cash, they came in, they bought right, they bought below replacement costs, they bought at a high cap rate, and they've been riding this wave. So that would be the greatest thing I've ever done in this industry is invest within it.
For me, the smartest thing I ever did was I took a bunch of money out of the snark market with Jay, and we bought a deal in Moorpark. And we also bought a deal in Henderson. And when things are good, people are buying a jet ski, a boat, a new car, and jewelry, and a watch. And but then in Vegas, when that market closed down, that property, Scott, went from $41,000 a month to $80,000 a month because people lost their job.
Yeah.
Service people have enough money to last 3 to 6 months. Where do they put all their stuff? Storage. Well, like I always tell people, we do good in the good times. We do better in the bad times.
Yeah, always. Yeah. I think the greatest regret that most self-storage investors, as a matter of fact, I wrote an article for ISS about lessons learned from folks that have been in the industry for a while. And the greatest regret or the biggest lesson learned was always, I wish I would have gotten it sooner. So that's a one piece. So as we look, we've been talking about in Storage Nation, you've got three folks here that have been through a number of recessions. And so I wanted to take this time to be a prepper, to prep for the upcoming economic cycle and the phase that we're heading into. So we talk a lot about the lessons, but also with an air of opportunity, as Carl has mentioned several times. So let's talk about where you see the greatest opportunity. If you can kind of summarize, I know we've been kind of dancing around that for the past hour or so, but what do each of you see as the greatest opportunity for Storage Nation to capitalize on out there as we head into this next phase?
I think the greatest opportunity, one, you got to prepare for it by creating a partnership, multiple partnerships, load up the bank with cash, 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 cash. Cash will be king in this next opportunity that's on the horizon. And you got to strike when it's hot. You got to move quick. You got to jump quick. But again, but you got to be cautious and you got to be conservative. And it's going to be just buying these deals the right way, not buying on speculation. You can buy on a pro forma if you really believe in it. But buying the property right, fundamentals, straight up, strict, strict real estate fundamentals. You put 40% minimum down, you get a 10-year loan, hopefully non-recourse if you can do it, and hopefully you're going to buy something that's got a little upside potential to it.
Yeah, I'd say the other thing, Scott, is that where what's great about our industry is that we're friends, we're competitors. I mean, all of us, we just went to Vegas a week ago. I mean, we go out with our friends. We go out with our competitors. And everyone in this industry is more than happy to help someone. So I've had some guy go, Carl, you might not want to buy that deal. Why not? Well, you know, there's 100,000 square feet coming around the corner. Really? Yeah. You're not in planning. He goes, I know the deal's under contract. Don't buy it. It's also the camaraderie of working together. And I'm sure guys have sent you deals, Scott. Go, hey, Scott, can you give me your quick 2-minute overview look at this? And we do the same thing.
Yeah. So if I could summarize, Jay, cash, 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 and cash.
Cash.
Speed is the name of the game. And we're finding, honestly, in the world of cost overruns and development and different projects this year, speed or the lack thereof has been more costly in our projects. Delays at all levels has been more costly than any price increase or even paying more for a property. So I hear that. Partnering is probably one of the best pieces of advice that I've ever received. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together and bring in some folks. And hopefully your partner that you're coming to the table with does have a good, strong balance sheet and cash as well. Two broke people with no credit, bad credit, no experience isn't a good partnership, by the way. And with that is sound underwriting too. I'm not putting words in your mouth, Jason, but you said the deal has to make sense. And so many times your partner may bring that as well. And if you or your partner, if you on your own, if you don't understand the underwriting side, if you don't understand financial math and real estate underwriting math, horrible. I was a C student at best in math, but you know what? I am an A plus student in real estate math. I'm no longer a student. I am the teacher. I am the master of it. So you got to get good at that.
Yep.
And smart optimism. don't let the excitement of getting into a deal trump the viability of it as well. And Carl, you're right. This community, this family of self-storage investors, we share 99%. We keep maybe 1%, maybe a half a percent close to our vest. That's the only competitive advantage that we have. And that's really maybe just some inside knowledge of something. But even then, if it's going to hurt one of our friendly competitors or our friends in the industry, everybody's willing to share it. And that was so refreshing when I came into this industry from coming from multifamily, which is there's just other asset classes out there where it's more like the Piranha Club versus the family and the community that we have within self-storage. And so I, for one, am just thankful. And again, that's reiterated. There isn't anybody who isn't smiling when they're at the ISS and the SSA conventions. And that's not just because they're in Vegas or because they're liquored up. It's just because no matter what's going on, even in an increasing interest rate environment and with the challenges that we have, everybody's genuinely thankful and glad that we're in this industry and around these people that are so welcoming and giving at all levels. And so I can't imagine doing anything else or being anywhere else.
I agree. And Scott, look at where I ran into you, which was at the International. And yeah. For me, I mean, part of the reason I've been traveling around the world is that I like self-storage. I like to travel. Mm-hmm. And at our dinner Tuesday night, let me see, we have people from Dubai, Monaco, mm-hmm. UK, mm-hmm. South Africa, yeah. Spain, Tokyo, Hong Kong, Raleigh, North Carolina, and me. You know what I mean? And there's 12 of us, or no, it's 14 of us at our table, of course, with Adrian Starling from Janus. And then we all went out to like Omnia, and then the party went to like 20 people. And I mean, and these people, I mean, I just love them. I see these self-storage people. I'm one of 9 kids. I see my self-storage family way more than I see my real family through the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I too am a self-storage junkie no matter where I go, and I travel around the world, and it's just fun to learn in this fraternity how other people are doing things all across the country and all around the world as well. And so, gentlemen, we could keep this party going on for another hour, but I need to be mindful of your time as well. And so we will definitely be heading into round 2. And so maybe we'll revisit in a couple of months. We get a little deeper into this. Sure. We'll share insights and kind of revisit our conversation here and help Storage Nation navigate this recession, but from an opportunistic standpoint, not from a fear standpoint. So Carl, Jason, I appreciate everything that you guys do for the industry as well. Your candor, everything that you shared with Storage Nation, and also for your friendship. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Till next time.
Hey, gang. Wait. 3 things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self-Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the following subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.